I am Paul Harris. That's Dan Strauss. That's Ian Geis. And this is Colin Jeffrey, who's here for the showbiz stuff for this hour. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you today, Paul?
I'm doing just fine. We have a couple of movies to get to. And then there's one movie that is involved in a controversy that you mentioned last week on this show. And there's kind of a follow-up to that. Why don't we start with that controversy, if you will, because neither of us went to see the screening, I don't think. You didn't go to see the screening,
no.
Did you?
No.
Of A Dog's Purpose. But last week on this show, you told people not to go because of a video that's out there that seems to show them abusing one of the dogs that they use to make the movie.
Yeah, there's a German Shepherd at one point. The premise of the movie is our dogs never truly leave us, and even when they pass on, their spirit comes back in the form of another dog. That's
voiced by Josh Gad.
Yeah, Josh Gad voices all the dogs.
Apparently,
so
when your dog dies, it comes back with Josh Gad's voice.
Exactly. So that's comforting. Olaf will always be there for you. And at one point, the dog's spirit is in a German Shepherd, and this dog has to jump into a river to save someone. That's the setup. But what we saw in the video was what appeared to be the dog being forced into the raging water, and against its will, not wanting to go in, clearly
fighting with the trainer,
pushing back. Not like, oh, maybe I don't want to, but definitely a dog saying, I don't want to go in this water. And then there's a cut, and from another angle or something, we see that the dog is up against the end of the pool, and the raging water sort of pushes it underwater, and it takes the rescue divers or whatever a few seconds to get to the dog.
And this became famous because TMZ showed it last week, and it caused a whole controversy about this. And then one of the producers of the movie, a guy by the name of Gavin Pallone, who's a name you may not know, but he's very influential in Hollywood, he wrote an op-ed for The Hollywood Reporter saying that when he saw this video on TMZ, he was appalled as well. And he said, I have to go investigate this. And he says, yes, it looks like there are things going on there that should not go on. And by the way, the two things that happened in that video are absolutely inexcusable and should never have happened. And the people who did it should be held accountable and never used again by that studio or its affiliates. However,
and there's always however in life,
what you saw in that video was very tightly edited and did not reflect the reality of the situation. Because if you think that the dog actually was shoved into the water and forced to swim against its will, that never happened. He explained in this op-ed that before they had done some rehearsals, then before they got to the first real take, he says, I'm quoting him, the handlers were asked to change the start point of the dog from the left side of the pool where he'd rehearsed to the right side, and that caused him to be spooked. When the dog didn't want to do the scene from that new position, they cut, but not soon enough. They did go back to the original position. The dog was comfortable, went out on his own, and they shot the scene. Now, you don't see that in the TMZ video. And you also don't see that the video that we used in the movie of a dog swimming through rapid waters or jumping into the rapid waters isn't a real dog.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had so much trouble with this dog fighting against wanting to do that, it's a CGI dog in the movie. So if you were concerned about, well, they abused the dog over and over again in this movie, no, we didn't. And he also says, now, I also want you to consider this. I'm quoting him again. Why did the person who edited the video, to seem like the two were connected, do it that way and not let you see that the dog was all right and never in mortal danger? And why did the person who shot it hold on to the video for a year and 3 months? Because this happened in October of 2015. If he wanted to protect animals, wouldn't he want whoever did wrong stopped from doing the same on other productions immediately? Instead, he or she waited until 8 days before the film's release, when the studio was spending money creating awareness of the film and probably got a bigger paycheck from TMZ by waiting.
Yeah.
Now, that's an interesting point, isn't it?
Yes.
It is, except it's not.
Why?
Imagine if this came out 15 months ago.
Yeah.
Can you tell me anything else that happened in the news 15 months ago? Anything?
No.
Exactly. That's why. That's exactly why. It would have had no impact.
Well, maybe,
now it has a huge impact because the studio and the distributor have to react. They have to react right now because it's 8 days before they spent tens of millions of dollars promoting this movie and they got Dennis Quaid attached to it, and now they have to react. 15 months ago, it would be like, wait, what movie? I haven't seen an ad for this. I don't know what you're talking about. Is Dennis Quaid attached to it? I don't even know. And it would have been swept under the rug and these people would have been working again. But when it happens 8 or 10 days before release, or 14 days, now they have to do it. I don't like this because it's an insider saying, we're doing everything above board. No, here's what's wrong. You know who pays a Humane Society representative on set to take care of these animals?
The producer?
Exactly. So this is kind of like saying, this is the wolf watching the hen house.
Yeah.
No, this should be done if we are truly concerned about the welfare of animals. It should be done outside. But perhaps more importantly, if they ended up using a CGI dog, do we need dogs in movies anyway? If they're going to be doing anything more than sitting and barking at people, do we actually need the dog in movie? Can't we just do a CGI dog? Do we ever need to train a dog? What level of realism does that add? And I'm a big fan of practical effects, but what level of realism does it add having a real German Shepherd versus CGI German Shepherd save a CGI kid? Because they're not dropping a kid in there or a person.
Yeah,
they're dropping a green marker so that they know where to put the CGI'd person.
Yep.
So what we really are seeing in this movie is real water with two CGI'd things in it.
And if you don't think that would look realistic enough, I invite you to go back and watch one of my favorite movies from last year, The Jungle Book, in which the animals look pretty damn realistic to me when they're chasing the kid.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. I don't like any of this, and there's nothing that they can say. They're trying to disparage the person who took a video to raise awareness. That shows you their motives. More so than the person who's going to make money, I don't care that they're going to make money. They're showing something that was done that was not above board. If they hadn't shot this video, do you think these producers would have ever told us we had issues with this dog? There were some questionable things.
No, it would have been buried. It would have been an internal thing. Yeah.
This person did exactly the right thing, waiting and making them. This movie is supposed to do $24 million more than likely this weekend. It's probably going to be closer to $17 million. $7 million is worth 15 months if it helps dogs from here on out or animals from here on out.
Well, here's one other way I think it might help. If this exposes that the American Humane Association, which is, you know, when you see a movie, it usually says at the end, no animals were harmed in the making of this movie. That certification comes from the American Humane Association, which is supposed to have a representative on the set anytime there are animals being used. And as you pointed out, they're paid by producers. Well, if this exposes the fallacy of that claim that they're there and they're just, okay, yeah, I'm on a set, go ahead, do whatever you want, I'll sign off on it because I'm getting paid, then that needs to be fixed so that the animals that are used in movies are protected better.
Yeah. But after The Jungle Book, I'm now firmly of the belief that unless the dog is going to sit there and look cute and, you know, and be a cool little dog that's on set, just CGI the dog. I don't need to see a dog jump through flames to save Jimmy or, you know, bark at the edge of a well. I don't need to see that. I'm okay. I realize not everything in movies is real. Go ahead and CGI the pooch. Like, I'm fine with it. Which sounded really dirty.
It did.
Did not mean
CGI the pooch.
Kids listening, do not Google CGI the pooch.
No.
Trust me on this one. You don't want to do that. You know who I feel sorry for in all of this? A guy by the name of Bruce Cameron. Bruce Cameron, 10 or 12 years ago, wrote a newspaper column called 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter, which went viral. And by the way, this is in 2006, 5, 7, something like that. Yeah. And going viral then was very different than viral today. It took a while because it had to be emailed around from everybody. It wasn't just in one place where everybody could link to it as easily as you can now. And that became a sitcom on ABC, which starred John Ritter, and by the way, was Kaley Cuoco's first big gig. She was the teenage daughter on that, long before The Big Bang Theory. And that show lasted only as long as John Ritter stayed alive before he died tragically. I think they tried to keep it on the air with James Garner as the grandpa for a while, but that just didn't work, and the show kind of fizzled out and went away. Well, Bruce wrote the article and got paid some as the, you know, one of the creative people behind 8 Simple Rules, and had, through circumstances none of his doing, the show went away. Now he writes a book called A Dog's Purpose that was a bestseller. Yeah. It gets bought. We're going to turn it into a movie. Boom! Once again, problems.
Yeah. Oh, poor guy.
He's the one I feel sorry for in all this.
Yeah. That's a shame for him.
Yeah. And he's a nice guy.
Maybe he could write a, we could do a, he could do a sitcom now about a screenwriter who every time he does a project, something outside of his control.
Well, ironically, you know what his next project was? 8 Simple Rules for Drowning Your Dog. See, that was a mistake, I think, doing that. You're just asking him for trouble, but he figures, like, trouble follows me. Doesn't really matter.
Let's invite it. Yeah.
That was a scene from the movie.
Yeah, that was very good. Is that a real story?
Yes. Yeah, that was real.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the movies that we have seen that are opening today, including Resident Evil, The Final Chapter. And by the way, I'm going to stop right there and say, I don't know anything about these movies. I haven't seen any of them. But anytime they say The Final Chapter, it's always a lie.
Yeah.
I hope it's about my ex-wife. Resident Evil. The Final Chapter.
He just wants to get to the final chapter of that. I understand.
Yeah. So this is the 6th movie in this franchise. It started back in 2002 with Mila Jovovich in Resident Evil. It was based on a video game. Most video game movies are really bad. This didn't start off that way, this franchise. Resident Evil was, go back and watch it. I think it holds up pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
It's good enough, but the idea is an evil corporation named the Umbrella Corporation says, hey, we've got this great vaccine. And it turns out that included in this vaccine is something called the T-virus. And it makes people, I don't want to say indestructible, but it turns them into zombies. That's the side effect. Uh-oh, you're a zombie.
And you're saying that's a bad thing.
That's not good. And so in the first movie, she has to go to this facility that's underground where this T-virus has been released, and she's got to kill all the zombies and stop the T-virus. Well, they kill all the zombies, but the problem is the T-virus escapes. And so, yes. So over the course of the next movies, the T-virus is expanding, and it's wacky. Like, I can't even explain the next 4 movies in the series for you, because we don't have that kind of time, and I would need visual aids.
Yeah. Is this Earl Grey T-virus?
Oh, my gosh.
I think it was Lipton.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I derailed you there.
Move along.
No, that's all right.
Keep going.
So this episode begins, and it's supposed to be the end of the story of our character here. The problem is they already did this. The 3rd movie in the series was called Resident Evil Extinction,
uh-huh,
and was supposed to be the end of a trilogy. Well, it was the end of a trilogy, but then there was another trilogy. So now we're up to 6 episodes.
Is George Lucas in charge of this?
Oh, my gosh. No. The problem, each of these movies, in my opinion, have been uneven. Not that they get worse progressively, but they're just, I don't
well,
think
movies
they're
2,
fun.
4, and 6 were even. 1, 3, and 5 were uneven.
Odd. There you go.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you.
So we're back to a point, they're not all bad. That's what I'm trying to say. There's still, you'd think by the 6th, it's like they're just getting worse and worse. Well, no. Some of them are good and fun in there and just goofy fun. The 14-year-old in all of us wants to see an attractive woman kick butt with explosions and cool things happening.
Mm-hmm.
And they provide that. And again, they do it. This looks very neat at times. The problem is, it's just, I've seen it too many times. I'm not particularly invested anymore.
They're just making the same story, movie over and over again?
Sort of. She killed someone in the last, I believe, in number 5, and now he's back. And I don't think that was the first time she's killed him. Like, this main guy is back again.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
You kill a guy and he comes back.
And it's just, it's gotten too goofy. And I guess it knows it's goofy, so it's got that going for it. I'm very conflicted about this movie, because it has some things that look really cool and neat fights, but then some of it's too dark and you can't quite tell what's going on. And there's lots of action and it's too gritty. It's just the colors turned down too much. I'm not going to get into the plot, because that's ridiculous to explain, other than to say it starts in, like, bombed out Washington, D.C. They had a great setup from 5 that they said, oh, yeah, let's throw that away. And instead, they created this weird new story. I would say you could jump on here, because you're going to be just as lost. Like, sure, if you've never seen a Resident Evil and you say, yeah, it sounds great, I want to go watch zombies get kicked in the head and blown up, then, yeah, you could hop on here. Why not? If you're a fan of the series, I don't think there's anything in here that's going to offend you, so go for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge fan of the series anymore. It's run its course for me. I will say, if you've never seen the original Resident Evil and you kind of like a spooky action horror mashup, go watch it, because I think it holds up well. This is, I really struggle with this, and this could be part of the reason. These movies have stopped doing particularly well in the U.S. The last movie did $42 million in the U.S. to a $65 million budget. Sounds horrible, except it did almost $200 million internationally.
Wow.
These are now movies. I mean, that's 17, 18% of its budget coming from the U.S., or box office coming from the U.S. That's very, very rare. Like, very rare to have that low of a percentage. So these aren't really made with an American audience in mind. I think this movie has already done $35 million worldwide. And I think it's probably only going to do about 13 here in the U.S. So I don't. It's a weird movie to review because it's kind of a convoluted story and ridiculous. But I play the video games, and that's how the video games are. They're ridiculous, so it feels true. I give it a 5 out of 10.
Okay.
But I don't think there's any reason to go see it unless you're saying, yeah, you know, I'm going to let the 14-year-old inside of me out and just have fun in a movie that makes marginal sense.
To your point about the international box office for action movies, Tuesday night I was at the Peabody, Powell Symphony Hall for the speaker series they have, and the speaker this week was John Cleese from Monty Python, who was great. He was just, it was a conversation with him and the moderator, and he was great, and he was asked, how he felt about being Q in a few of the Bond movies. He took over from Desmond Llewellyn and played that role for a while. And then they went with a younger Q and went in a different direction. And he was asked, well, what did you think of those movies? And he said, well, it was very interesting being in them, because even having the script in front of me, I read the entire script, I still had no idea what the plot was. But he said that didn't matter, because as you may have noticed, if you've been going to these movies and other action movies, in the last 5 to 10 years especially, they have ramped up the action so that what used to be a 4 or 5 minute action sequence now takes 13 minutes on screen.
Yeah.
And that, to me, diminishes the quality of the movie. This is John Cleese speaking, saying that. And he said, do you know why they do that? It's because of the international audiences. Because in China, they will make $150 million off of a movie that made only 25 or 30 million here in the United States. And then when you add it in for the rest of the world, that's what they want to see. So Bond movies are no longer made for an American or British audience. They're made for the action junkies in those other countries, which is really why the money is there for the financing to begin with. It comes from those countries. There are Chinese investors that say, okay, we'll give you the money, but we want to see long action sequences. So if you put 6 long 13-minute action sequences in a movie, you don't have time for anything else, and the plot doesn't matter.
No.
So that's what it is.
I want to say this. Final chapter, there's definitely an opening if they want to continue.
Of course there is.
And I will say, Paul W.S. Anderson is the writer. He's been involved in all 6 of these. He's also married to Mila Jovovich, the star of all 6 of these. So if they want to buy a new house, I would fully expect to see 7.
The Michael Caine plan.
Resident Evil, haha, gotcha.
You know that line Michael Caine once said? He was asked about Jaws 4.
Uh-huh.
He was asked, have you ever seen Jaws 4? He said, no, but I saw the house it bought.
Yes.
All right, the movie I saw this week was called Gold. It is, wow, it's one of those movies that, like yours, is a little tough to review. Let me put it this way. Matthew McConaughey stars in this. He plays Kenny Wells, who's the head of a mining company that has been down on its luck and hasn't really found anything valuable to mine in a long time. One night, Wells has a dream about finding lots of gold in a valley in Indonesia. And he remembers an expert named Michael Acosta, who's played in the movie by actor Edgar Ramirez. And this guy Acosta has a reputation for knowing where to dig to find valuable minerals and precious metals. So Wells, the McConaughey character, flies to Jakarta, Indonesia, and meets with Acosta, and the two begin an adventure in the jungle to find the gold. Except for one thing. It's not an adventure in the jungle that makes up most of this movie. I made it sound a lot more exciting than it really is when I put in that phrase, adventure in the jungle. There's very little time spent in the dirt. Instead, Gold has too many scenes in offices and boardrooms where Wells and other speculators talk about raising capital and selling shares in the company and boosting stock prices and pimping their gold finds so they can get other people to give them money. And, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars are going to be involved because it's supposedly the biggest gold find in history. And McConaughey, in the lead, he puts everything he has into the role of Wells. It's not that, all right, all right, all right, Matthew McConaughey. He gained lots of weight to play this role. He shaved his head a little bit to achieve a look that... Do you remember what Christian Bale looked like in American Hustle?
Yes.
Kind of paunchy and with the bad comb over. The first
looks
scene
like a middle-aged man.
Yeah, but with a really, really bad comb over that he spent most of the first scene working on. That's exactly what Matthew McConaughey looks like in this movie. It's like he studied that Christian Bale character. Now, interesting, you know who was supposed to play this movie before they cast Matthew McConaughey? Christian Bale.
So there you go.
So that's why that character looks that way. Here's the problem. The character of Kenny Wells, who is a fast-talking salesman, always with a cigarette lit, doesn't have much charisma. I didn't like him. It wasn't like I was rooting against him because he was a villain. He was the hero, and I was never rooting for him. That's a bad sign in a movie, when you really don't care if the guy who's down on his luck ever gets back on his luck and holds on to it. That's bad. The movie includes a couple of twists that I'm not going to spoil, because there will be people who will go see this. I know it's opening in 2,000 theaters around the country, but Colin, you're the box office maven. I'm going to predict this movie doesn't even make $5 million this weekend.
I'd say that's probably pretty close. Because it's competing still against Hidden Figures.
Right.
It's crushing it.
Here's another thing I'll say about this movie. I never know about a surprise twist that's coming up in the movie. My wife, who reads 3 mystery novels a week, always sees him coming. She'll lean over to me and say, see that guy? He's the killer right there. No. She knows that sort of stuff. She figured it out. Or watch this guy. He's going to, or her. She knows that sort of stuff. I never see it. I'm always surprised. Well, not always, because in this movie, there are a couple of twists and turns that I saw coming down the highway from a mile away. Gold is the name of the movie. It has a strong supporting cast. You got Bryce Dallas Howard as McConaughey's girlfriend, Corey Stoll, Stacey Keach, Bruce Greenwood, Craig T. Nelson, Bill Camp, who played Detective Box in that HBO series The Night Of, and was so good for that. Unfortunately, they're caught up in a plot that, while Dan based on a true story...
Oh.
Is murkier than an Indonesian river in a downpour.
Whoa, look at that. Whoa.
That's my quote. Put that one
up. Wow.
Murkier than an Indonesian river in a downpour, says Paul Harris.
I don't think that pull quote's going to make it.
I don't think so either. Like you, I'm giving this week's movie a 5 out of 10 for gold.
Oof. This could be the worst opening ever for Matthew McConaughey.
Really?
Yeah. Which is not good.
No.
After we just had Will Smith with his worst ever opening last year for that garbage Talking to Death movie.
I don't even remember.
No one remembers. It was Will Smith is, yeah.
Yeah. Gold, 5 out of 10 this weekend. Let's take a break. When we come back, we have to talk a little bit about Mary Tyler Moore, who died this week, and her role in the entertainment business. And also the Oscar nominations and the Razzie nominations came out this week. I'm sure you have some thoughts on that. We'll do that after this on the Big 550 KTRS.
Is this big country?
Yes, in a big country.
Yeah. They're hit.
Yeah, a whole medley of them.
Yeah.
This is the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, Ian Geist, Colin Jeffrey talking about showbiz. We should say a couple of words about Mary Tyler Moore, who died at the age of 80 on Wednesday. CBS did a one-hour tribute to her last night, 20 minutes of which were taken up by Oprah.
That's what I heard somebody on Facebook said. It was horrible because Oprah, why would Oprah?
It was so nice of them to squeeze in Mary Tyler Moore's name to the Oprah tribute last night. You know why? Gail King was the host.
Oh, my goodness.
Gail, who can you get for the Mary Tyler Moore tribute? Oprah! Gail, who can you get for dinner? Oprah! Doesn't matter what you ask her. Gail, what's a five? Oprah! That's all she does.
Ugh.
Now, I'm curious, for Ian and Colin, you guys are in your 30s. So you were not alive when the Mary Tyler Moore Show aired. I know you're hip to the Dick Van Dyke Show, mostly because we've talked to Carl Reiner on this show every year for I don't know how many years.
And TV Land, but...
And TV Land as well. Have you guys ever actually seen the Mary Tyler Moore Show? An entire episode?
Maybe two Probably. Episodes or three episodes.
Yeah, but it's not a show that I thought was funny enough to go search out to watch.
You never binge-watched?
No.
No.
And probably wouldn't.
But I know all the, yeah.
Captain Steubing.
I've seen clips on like YouTube. Every now and then one will get shared or something.
It was even when I was younger, it was being played reruns, I'm sure, on one channel, TV Land, or I don't know, one of...
But the reason I asked is because on this special last night, they didn't actually let any scenes play out. They would play a five-second clip from the show, and you can't get any sense of a show that you've never seen before in just 5 seconds. You can't get any context. So I want to play for you a scene from the very first Mary Tyler Moore Show, in which she, as a 30-year-old woman, has moved to Minneapolis to try to start a new life, and she's going to interview for a job at a TV station, WJM-TV, in Minneapolis. And the guy she's interviewing with is Lou Grant, who was played by the great Ed Asner. Here's that scene.
How old are you?
30.
No hedging. No, how old do I look?
Why hedge? How old do I look?
30. What religion are you?
Mr. Grant, I don't quite know how to say this, but you're not allowed to ask that when someone's applying for a job. It's against the law.
Want to call a cop?
No.
Good. Would you think I was violating your civil rights if I asked if you're married?
Presbyterian. Well, I decided I'd answer your religion question.
Divorced?
No.
Never married?
No.
Why?
Why?
Your type?
Mr. Grant, there's no simple answer to that question.
Yes, there is. How about, no, I can type, or yes, I can.
There's no simple answer to why a person isn't married.
How many different reasons can there be?
65.
Parts per minute. My typing question.
Yes.
Look, miss, would you try answering the questions as I ask them?
Yes, Mr. Grant, I will, but it does seem that you've been asking a lot of very personal questions that don't have a thing to do with my qualifications for this job.
You know what? You got spunk.
Well, yes.
I hate spunk.
You see, now in context, that's much better than just running the last 5 seconds of that.
Yes.
Where you didn't get to see how the relationship was building over the previous 90 seconds. But if you hear that, you think to yourself, A, that sounds pretty clever and pretty funny. And also, how tight was the writing there?
Oh, man.
Well, and I think something, when I go back and watch these shows or movies that were before my time, I have to remind myself, I'm like, oh yeah, this was the first time they did that. I've seen that. We've all seen that gag in 20 sitcoms now, or a variation of that. But you're going back and you're like, oh, no one had ever done that. Oh, that's why it's because they did it in its sort of purest form.
Right.
And since then, we've had to play around with it and we've seen sort of perversions of it, but never the original form. So yeah, that's still funny.
It's also important to mention, as I did a few months ago when her ex-husband Grant Tinker died, he was an executive in the television industry for a long time and at one point ran NBC for many years, in the years when they were number one. But before that, he had a production company that he ran called MTM, because they were married. He named it after her. And the two of them actually ran it and helped produce some of the shows that really changed television. Hill Street Blues and L.A. Law, they were the ones who produced WKRP in Cincinnati, the only realistic thing I've ever seen about radio on television. So she had a bigger role than just Laura Petrie on the Dick Van Dyke Show and Mary Richards on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. But I just want to give you some context on that. Now, before we go on, you had something you wanted to mention about Regal Theaters and the Oscar nominations this week.
Yeah, the Oscar nominations came out. Best Picture, I believe there are 9 this year.
Yes.
And I've talked to quite a few people, and most people don't have the opportunity to get out and see all the Best Picture nominees. Regal Theaters, which has a few locations in the St. Louis area, for $35, you can get a ticket, and they are doing a marathon of the Oscar movies. Four films a day, I think, is how it works out for a week. So there'll be different combinations, but $35. So if you want to see three of them, buy the $35 ticket. You've made your money, but you can see, you have the opportunity to see all nine.
And that's La La Land, Moonlight, Manchester by the Sea, Arrival, Fences, Lion, Hidden Figures, Hacksaw Ridge, and Hell or High Water, all of which we gave pretty high rankings on this show. What surprised you in the nominations this week?
I think the love for Moonlight wasn't necessarily surprising. How much love it got is good. I liked that Lion got as much support as it did.
Me too.
Arrival. I think the 14 is a lot of nominations for La La Land. It's a lot.
Every category it was up for.
Yeah. And it can only win 13 because it's twice in song, best original song. That's a bit shocking to me that 14... the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, well, that's a lot. And there's probably some that doesn't have a chance to win, but I guess it just got all the nominations.
It's only, there have only been two other movies that have been nominated for 14 awards, Titanic and All About Eve.
Yeah, and Ben-Hur has won 11.
Mm-hmm.
They only get two. The other thing I was shocked about wasn't a nomination that wasn't there. It was that people were surprised that Clint Eastwood didn't get a nomination for Sully.
Mm-hmm.
The movie that I had enormous problems with, because they show the plane landing, crash, whatever, three times in a 90-minute movie.
I know.
That's not good directing. If you can't come up with other things to show me than the same stuff from different angles three times, you are not the... So I'm shocked that people were clamoring that Clint Eastwood get recognition.
I was very surprised that Arrival was nominated for Best Picture, but Amy Adams, the lead, did not get nominated.
Which is a shame.
I think she got deductions for also being in Nocturnal Animals, a
very
piece
possible.
Of dreck. Worst movie of the year last year on in my eyes.
But I think people should go see, if they haven't, we talked about it and both liked it quite a bit, Lion.
Yeah.
It is a powerful, intimate movie that is not going to crush your spirit. Like it's a heavy movie that isn't going to make you want to curl up and cry.
It's really, really wonderful and heartwarming.
Yes. Yeah. It's worth watching.
I also want to mention that Taraji P. Henson should have gotten nominated for Best Actress for Hidden Figures. Octavia Spencer got Best Supporting Actress.
She shouldn't have gotten, I don't think.
I don't think so either, but Taraji P. Henson was so good as Kathleen Johnson, the lead character in that movie. She deserved it more than Meryl Streep did for Florence Foster Jenkins.
Yes.
Do you think that Meryl Streep's Golden Globe speech helped her in Hollywood to get more?
I don't know when the votes are due. I think they're due before the Golden Globes, quite possibly.
So then they just automatically say, okay, Meryl Streep and four others.
20th nomination.
I know.
20th.
And I think she's a terrific actress. But that was not a...
And then Fences. Viola
Davis.
Viola Davis.
Lock of the year.
But she's the first African-American actress with three nominations.
Here's the weird thing about that. She's the co-star of the movie, not a supporting actress.
Yeah.
It's her and Denzel Washington as the two leads.
They're playing games to get a nomination.
Mel Gibson is back in. I guess Hollywood's forgiven him. Nate Parker still out. I don't know if they'll ever forgive him.
Yeah.
Maybe another 10 years has to go by. And as predicted, nothing for The Birth of a Nation. Now, here's one more question about the Oscars I got to ask you. In the In Memoriam segment, who comes last? Debbie Reynolds or Carrie Fisher?
Ooh.
Carrie Fisher. I think so. Bigger popular impact.
I think Debbie Reynolds.
I think Debbie Reynolds, too.
For the old-timers in Hollywood.
You know, they're making a movie about Caitlyn Jenner. It's called Ben-Him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Look forward to that.
Yeah, next year.
This callback to 75 seconds ago.
That's okay. Doesn't matter.
Know. That's all right.
The Razzie Awards were also out this week. The nominations up for Worst Picture this year, Zoolander 2, Batman versus Superman, Dirty Grandpa, Gods of Egypt, Hillary's America, and Independence Day Resurgence. I have no problem with any of those being on that worst of list. Do you?
No.
With Dirty Grandpa, was that the one with
De Niro?
And Efron.
De Niro.
Here's the only problem I have. Under Worst Supporting Actress, they did not include Mackenzie Lee, who was in Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, which I saw, and she gave the worst performance in recorded history in a major motion picture.
That's bad.
She's not even nominated.
No, I'm sad to see Aubrey Plaza get a nomination because I think she is very funny.
What was she in?
Dirty Grandpa.
Oh, well, it's her own fault.
Yeah. I had no problem with her, though.
That's the showbiz stuff for this week. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll check the news, and then the Harris Challenge and Mike Evans and Knuckleheads in the News, all in the 5 o'clock hour on the Big 550 KTRS.